Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason. Welcome back to
jet
your
lag.
Home.
Oh, the jet lag. The jet lag. Oh,
I've heard of it.
Well, I woke up. Well, I don't know. I got up at 5.
Yeah, that happens. It's going to happen.
I wouldn't say I had the best night's sleep, but I did get some sleep and am functional today. But of course, I'll crash tonight, and that's just how it goes.
That's what you got to do.
I'll get back on. I mean, 2 weeks.
It's a long time.
And 2 weeks in a time zone, 8 and 9 hours ahead. Is it takes some adaptation. I mean, that's basically what you did when you went to India, right?
Yeah, it was 10 and a half, yeah, which is also extra weird with that half hour in there. But yeah.
Yeah, that's
it's a big chunk of the day there.
It's a lot. So I did wake up really early while I was jet lagged on the other end in Amsterdam. I woke up really early and went down to do some work. The one time I had a story to write, the one bit of work I did while I was there the whole time. And the Giants game was still on. So I actually streamed the last couple innings of a night baseball game from the night before while writing and eating breakfast. That was pretty funny. Time zones, curvature of the earth. It's weird. It's wacky. But we got back. I still, my daughter was complaining. Jamie was like, oh God, so long. And I said, it's a miracle. We were halfway around the world earlier today, and now we are here at home. And, you know, and we flew over Greenland, which I think is cool. I just think that's cool. I saw like a bunch of glaciers and stuff. Nobody loves. I think very few people love the mechanics of the travel of it, but it is kind of amazing that we can go from one side of the world to the other so quickly.
Yeah, I still forget that I was in India sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I'll see stories from it and remember, like, oh, I was there. I've been to that place. I was rewatching one of the... we actually rewatched all the Mission Impossible movies because my girlfriend wanted to rewatch them. And there's one that's set... part of it is shot in Mumbai. And we were like, oh, it's Mumbai. We lived there for a little while.
Yeah. You were there for what? 2 months? 6 weeks?
6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Yeah, so... A while. Enough to like get your bearings and definitely get over that jet lag.
Oh yeah. Yeah, well that's true. The I found that like in London we were there for a week and I felt like by the end of that I knew like where everything was in the neighborhood where we were staying, which is great cuz and now that's done. But it was like we were there for 4 or 5 days and I went down this street that was just a street I hadn't gone down, one of the four streets, four directions away from where we were staying. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is, there's a cafe down here and a Tesco and I should have come down here way earlier. But oh, well, I used it for the last 3 days. But, you know, I wish I had known it was there before. But, you know, that happens.
So it goes.
Yeah, it was fun, though. It was nice. It's very rare that I have a 2 week vacation in my life. It's been extremely rare, and then of course having the whole family do it. This is probably you know, who knows, but this is probably the only time that we're going to take our kids on a 2 week long European vacation. So it was special.
Maybe they'll take you someday.
What Lauren was telling my kids was that, you know, when she was 16, her parents took her and her sister to Europe for a vacation, and that was very much you're going to go off to college and, you know, we'll never do this again. And like, I have been on vacations with her family. Like, it was not the last hurrah after all, but they held up pretty well, I thought, too. They were really troopers when it came to the travel. They did a good job. You know, they got put in some situations they're not used to in countries that they've never been to. I think they did pretty well. I mean, we did bore them with some stuff, but that's going to happen. We tried to mix in some stuff that they'd be more interested in. I mean, it's not that we didn't, not everything we did, not all the decisions we made were because of, us, right? A lot of it was really for them to try to make it something that would be palatable to them. It was kind of a greatest hits of places we'd already been to. Mm-hmm. Because, again, we were kind of trying to select stuff that we thought they might like.
Hit the high points.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There was a moment when we were in the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam where they were just sitting on a bench obviously not impressed by all the Rembrandts that were around. And we discovered that they had been playing a game, which is actually brilliant, which is they were counting cats. Like, find all the cats in all the paintings. I thought that was actually
finding all the cats roaming loose in the museum. That's a that's a very different kind of game. Very different problem.
But they're harder to see because they're not.
They
up,
are. That's true.
Up in the main view, you got to see them sneaking around. Anyway, so yeah, 2 weeks. Mike Hurley got married. That was nice. Mm-hmm. Saw a lot of people I know. A lot of people you know. That was good.
And, yeah, I saw many pictures. Many pictures.
Many pictures. It's very London. There's a lot of stuff to see there. It was good. And, kind of tired, but also, I have to say, there is somewhere between a week and 2 weeks where there's like I feel like there's a break point where if you go away for a week, you come back and it's like, this was not long enough. Mm-hmm. But coming back after 2 weeks, it's like, I was glad to be home. Like, I was glad we had that great trip. So somewhere in there, between 7 and 14 days, there's a break point, I think, where it's like, I'm fine now. Maybe it's 10, maybe it's 12. I don't know where it is exactly. But somewhere in there where you're like, okay, that was a lot. Especially if you're, not settling in for 6 weeks or something like that. Like, we were talking to their people. I don't know if they've talked about this publicly, so I won't say who it was, but somebody at the wedding who, it's not Marco, who is staying in London for 2 months this summer. And that's going to be different, right? That's a different kind of vibe.
It's a long time,
Than, being in a hotel living out of a suitcase where it's and doing like three activities every single day. You're not living, you're actively touristing, and that's more exhausting than just kind of hanging out.
Right. I mean, even when we were in Iceland earlier this year and like we got stuck there for like an extra day or two, like by the end of that time, especially there, it's like a slightly different situation because you have expectations about when you're going to leave, right? And when you're going to go home, and you've kind of mentally prepared yourself. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're stuck. And that changes your feeling from, this is a place that we, wanted to go come to and do things, to, this is a place we cannot escape.
Let me out. Yeah.
It was still nice. It was nice to have extra time. But I think by the end of that, because especially with like the limbo feeling of like, are we leaving or are we not leaving today? That definitely starts to wear on it. It's like, I just want to be home. Just want to be home now.
Yeah. By the way, for those, there is definitely a cross section of the listenership of this podcast who gets very excited when there are noises. So I just want to let you know, yes, you are hearing laundry in the background at my house.
Enjoy your ASMR moment here.
Because guess what, folks? I got a lot of laundry to do. Also, my daughter is going, get this, she's going on a trip to visit a friend tomorrow. So she has to wash all her clothes so she can pack and go to the airport tomorrow.
Ah, resilience of the youth.
Yes, that's right. Well, when you're 16 years old, you've got plenty of energy and the ability to do stuff like that.
It reminds me of, I think maybe I told the story before, but it's one of those things where when I was a kid, I remember we would drive back from vacation in upstate New York visiting my mom's family. It's like a 6-hour car drive. And so we'd get home and I would just be so excited and want to go do all these things, could have been stuck in a car for 6 hours, and my dad would be like, I need to lie down. And I would always be like, all we've done is sit in a car, why do you need to lie down? And they're like, not a year or two ago I had that feeling of getting out of a car after a 6-hour drive and was like, oh man, I need a nap. And I was like, oh okay, I'm starting to understand now.
Yeah,
it's a little different when you're not 15 years old stuck in a car.
The some tech updates from this trip. I made the mistake of using Apple Maps in Europe.
Oops.
Which led to a completely fake gas station next to where we were returning the rental car. Completely fake. It was a house. And said it was a Texaco station.
Apple Maps led me astray this morning in Boston, so you don't have to go to Europe for that.
Yeah, it's true. And again, to be fair, I was also led, this is a story I've told before, but I was also led to, in Mountain View, not very far from the Google headquarters, I was led to somebody's house claiming it was an In-N-Out burger. So bad map data, it happens. But I did actually use the report a problem feature in Apple Maps, I said, this location is closed, because that was one of the options. And then in the notes I said, this does not exist. This is someone's house. It's a complete phantom. no, basically. And like 5 days later, I got a push notification that said, or less than that, 4 days later, maybe 3 days later, I got a push notification that said, that point of interest has been removed. Like, all right, hopefully the next person who has to turn in a rental car in Preston, England, will not go to the fake Texaco and will instead go to where we went, which is two blocks over to another gas station, a different gas station that actually does exist. But so that was a mistake. And we also had a mistake where so the car, our rental car, had CarPlay. And mm-hmm. I've never used CarPlay in a real car before. I have a CarPlay receiver. Like, that I can plug in and put on my desk and, like, look at CarPlay, which is stupid, but that's what I... Because I wanted to be able to at least have used it. And I can't put CarPlay in our van. I can't put CarPlay in our electric car. They just... I can't. Could put it in my daughter's car. Might do that, thinking about it. But anyway, but this rental car had it. So that was cool. But, of course, iOS 11, you know, we're not yet in the world where you can use Google Maps and CarPlay. So we used Apple Maps, and we had the unfortunate situation where, you know, it's a rental car, it's an automatic, or it's a manual transmission, which we sold our last manual transmission car 4 years ago, so we're rusty with that. Rental car, always different, and now you're driving on the wrong side of the road. So, you know, lots of complexity there. So the directions from where we rented the car to where we were going were all on A and B roads, and I was like, okay, this is good, and motorway. So it's all like big roads.
Right.
So we start to navigate, and then at some point it gets us off the motorway and we're going down crazy narrow, windy roads. And it turns out that at some point it had just redirected us to something that was going to save 2 minutes by getting off the motorway one exit early and winding through little towns where, you know, that are where there's oncoming traffic. But it's just wide enough that people don't stop and let the other person go. Yeah, they just expect that you're going to go past each other in this incredibly narrow roads. Those are the worst. The one-lane roads, those are fine because everybody knows that if somebody else is coming, the jig is up. Somebody's got to give, right? But it's the ones that are just narrow but not one lane that are terrifying. So it sent us down those. That was a major Apple Maps fail. It's like, no. And there's no way to say, no. You promised me A roads and B roads. I don't want your saving of 5 minutes by... anyway, so that was a little bit disappointing on Apple Maps' part, even though it was
scenic,
fun to see...
The scenic route.
Even though it was fun to see CarPlay, which is interesting, and I would love to have in a car, because it would be nicer than the car interface that my car has, but it's not going to work that way. So anyway, so that was those are kind of my tech... updates. Otherwise, you know, we brought a couple of batteries with us. We brought a bunch of plug adapters. My son was going to bring his Nintendo 3DS, and we found that Nintendo is so cheap, first off, that when you buy a 3DS, it doesn't have a power adapter. You have to buy that separately, and it's not a standard. It's a Nintendo-only power plug.
Yeah.
And it turns out, as we're packing on the last day that we're here, it's also the only... basically the only electronic power brick in our entire house.
Not voltage switching?
That only does 110. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So we brought the Switch instead, and Julian had a perfectly good time with the Switch. We bought him another game. It was fine, even though he wanted to bring the 3DS. But come on, Nintendo. So that was really dumb. But other than that, I had a bunch of plug adapters, and I brought my Anker 5-port charger, which does accept 240 as well as 110. And so with a plug adapter on that, you know, boom, you've got lots of device charging. And I brought a couple other things. And so that was all good. And the two battery packs meant that when we were out and about for a long day or on the plane, because on the way there, we didn't have chargers in our seats. On the way back, we did. And so that was all pretty easy. Jamie has a laptop that she uses to watch movies and TV shows and stuff, especially like Netflix. And you can't save shows on desktop, right? Because they're afraid of piracy, which is dumb because their shows get pirated anyway. But on iOS, you can. So we actually, it was funny. She left her laptop at home and we had her use Lauren's old iPad Air instead, because she could preload shows on there. And so that became the sort of like TV for the trip. And I think worked pretty well. She was happy to have her laptop back, but I think the iPad worked pretty well for her. So, you know, it's a lot easier to travel than it used to be. We used, you know, 3 SIM cards to get our phones, basically unlimited data while we were there, and walking around. Once you've got data and you can send, you know, Instagram photos and stay in touch and everything like that, and it's easy to charge, and it's just it's very different from the old days when you were completely cut off from everybody. But right. It is, there's a lot of kind of convenience to it. And I think in some ways it might make you a bolder explorer, knowing that you've got information to rely on to help you explore, instead of maybe being a little more timid because the phone can kind of help you give you advice and give you information.
It's funny. I spend a lot of time just wandering around, and I feel like, you know, traveling in Europe when I was 21 or so, and obviously they didn't have any of this technology. I barely had Wi-Fi in my dorm. In fact, they didn't have Wi-Fi in my dorm. I had to take my computer down to the computer lab, unplug the Ethernet cable in the back of the crappy PCs that were there, and plug it into my PowerBook.
Good times.
But, you know, I wandered.
That was back when Apple had ports on their laptops.
Right. Yeah. Back in the day. I wandered many, many places, and I just, you know, some of it was just, I didn't know any better. Like, there were kind of broad swaths. Like, all right, don't go necessarily down here in the middle of the night or anything like that, but you could pretty much roam wherever you want to go. And it made me much more willing also to try out, I feel like, other, like, places that I would, like, look up stuff on Yelp and be like, oh, I don't want to eat there. It's only 3 stars or something, right? Like, and at that point, I was like, I'm hungry. That place looks like it serves food. Guess I'm buying food there.
Yeah.
And, you know, that has its own freedom as well. It's a different aspect, right? Like, you know, when you can't look everything up, you kind of eventually... And that was a little bit of a problem in India, too, just because the data's not all there. They have plenty of it. Like, you can order food and have food delivered, which we did many a time. But there are definitely places where you would go and you'd be like, yeah, there's no information about anything.
Yeah, right.
So yeah. you just pick something, right? And you cross your fingers and hope for the best, or you use tour guides or whatever. So it's interesting. It's interesting to see the dichotomy of, like, you know, having access to all that information, because there have been plenty of places, like, you know, when we went to Iceland, like, there was still a decent amount of stuff you could look up online. Granted, a lot of stuff was closed because it was February and it snowed a lot. But, you know, that's a separate issue.
I mean, we used to use guidebooks and stuff, right? And
yeah, we still do in some places.
One of the nice things about it is I feel like it gives you a little more freedom of stuff that's not in the guidebooks, or you're walking somewhere and you're like, oh, what's around here? And you can look that up. And I'll tell you, the one that really got me this time is transit directions. So... Yeah. In Amsterdam, the place we stayed was right on, there was a tram stop on the block, and we bought 48-hour tram tickets. And, you know, we wanted to go to this museum, and we went over there on this. It's like, you just take the tram over there. Okay, great. And then I had 2 friends, a friend of mine from high school and our old pal from Macworld, Kurt Poff, both recommended the same brewery in Amsterdam. And I was like, all right, well, and those guys know beer too. Kurt and Steve know beer. So I was like, all right, we're going to go there. But then I looked on the map. I was like, oh, but it's like on the opposite direction from where the museums and stuff that we're going to are. It's kind of far out there. But we had these tram passes, you know, 48-hour tram passes. And I just put in the brewery, which is Brewery Tai, I think is how it's pronounced. It's on the Eye River. And it's like in a windmill or next to a windmill, big windmill. And it was one essentially like walk here a block, walk a block and a half, get on this tram, take it this many stops, and walk off and go across the river or across the canal right here, and you're there. Like, super simple. And that was one of those things where, would I have, like, gotten a tram map and studied it and figured out where we were going to go? And it's like, I don't know. I was pretty, before I looked it up, I mean, I was pretty intimidated about it. But having those directions that basically it's like a local saying, oh, yeah, walk down there, get on the K tram, or the number 5 tram or whatever. And, you know, and then get off and walk across and you're there. Just amazing. And felt so empowering, because then literally I'm here. I want to go there. How do I do that on the public transit system? Done. It was super easy. And in London, of course, there are so many different transit options. you know, I've taken the tube many times without, you know, Apple Maps or Google Maps directions before. You can figure that out. It's not that hard. It's nice to have them suggest routes because you know it's probably the most efficient route. But the thing in London was I would be much less confident with the buses and where they go.
Sure.
And where we were staying, we were like on a bus route that was the perfect way to get to a bunch of places we wanted to go. And because I could look on the maps and see, like, you take this bus toward this destination, go 11 stops, get off here, and you're there. And that gave me, again, that extra confidence to just walk down the street and wait for the 55 bus to come along and take us down to you know, where we needed to go. And so we did, which was great. And the kids got to ride on, you know, real live London double-decker bus. But I've ridden with friends, my friend Simon Jerry, who works at IDG to this day. I've ridden with him and his daughter, you know, like on the way to take her to school in the morning before he goes to work. And that's, you know, that's fine, but he's a local. So it gives me that little extra. So I got to say, I come down in favor of how technology can make you, in the end, I saw more and did more because the tech stuff like emboldened me or enabled me to do the right thing to get where I needed to go. And mm-hmm. I was very happy about that. And very happy to have my SIM cards too, which, you know, I bought three of for $26 each or whatever, that gave us basically unlimited data while we were there. And that was, that was really nice. Casey Liss and his family did the AT&T $10 a day thing you can do, but they were only there for a handful of days, whereas we were there for 2 weeks, and it was a better deal to just swap our SIM cards.
Yeah, I had this thing where the other week I discovered that AT&T had upped my monthly bill by $5, but had also changed me to a plan with twice as much data, which was apparently a thing that they did. They just did a really bad job of communicating it. And so I was like, well, all right, fine. You know, frankly, for $5 a month more, 12 gigabytes of data instead of 6 gigabytes of data is a pretty good deal. So I'll take it. And I also noticed that it says I now, with the new plan, have free use of my phone data, texting, etc. in Mexico. And I happen to be going to Mexico in November. So I thought to myself, well, that's a fairly good deal in that case. So I think I will experiment there and see if that ends up working well. Hopefully the speeds are good or better than, or at least comparable with what I could get if I bought a SIM card. And I can always buy a SIM card, I'm guessing, if I really need to. But
yeah,
I look forward to a day where more things are universal across the world, where it's a lot easier to go and not have to swap to a different SIM card with a different company. Because honestly, the companies and the cell plans, it's not that the plans are always better, but dealing with, like, I'm coming to this country, I want to buy a SIM card, for me, has worked better in almost every country I've ever been to, aside from the U.S. I don't know what the experience of people coming to the U.S. for, like, a few weeks is in terms of how they handle their data plans.
I've heard that there are, like, T-Mobile or somebody has like, a similar thing where you can get a card and on that. Although a lot of phone companies have great roaming. I was talking to Mike, I think, about this, where he's got three, and they've got great roaming, and I think it was Mike. It was somebody in the UK, and as a result, like, you just go to other countries, and it's fine. And they're like 70 countries or something where they just carry over your data. And the AT&T deal is not bad. They used to charge you a fortune, and now it's like they just charge you $10 a day when you're using it, and when you're not using
it,
you don't get charged. So when I went to Canada late last year, I paid $30 essentially because I was there for 3 days, and I just used my phone. That's fine, like, good deal. But I spent $30, a little bit less, on my SIM card for 2 weeks, and so that's a little bit different. Yeah, you know, everybody just is trying to get their piece. I get it. I'm very happy. What I will say is this: I'm very happy that the standard for most people in the U.S. these days is that your phone is unlocked. It's not everybody, because if you're buying on a plan from AT&T, I think they maybe lock your phone. But like, if you buy it through Apple, or if you buy it, you know, unencumbered and not financed, but even if you finance it through Apple, it's an unlocked phone, and there's something to be said for that, because then you have the freedom.
Way better than used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Having gotten my phone kind of unorthodoxly unlocked a couple times.
Yeah,
in the past.
It's way better. In fact, Jamie's phone was not unlocked, even though we called AT&T before we left and said, "So are the phones on this account unlocked?" And they're like, yeah, they are. But Jamie's phone was not unlocked. So we had to call their, and they did a great job. We called their international support number, which is a free call no matter where you are in the world.
Nice.
On your AT&T line. And they were able to unlock her phone while we were in, you know, the middle of nowhere in the Lake District in England, which was great.
Awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, but we're back now doing laundry, all those things.
Well, you missed a barn burner of a week. Let me tell you.
It looks like not a lot went on.
So apparently the Friday before July 4th week was one of the most travel, or they were expecting anyways. I didn't see the final numbers. They're expecting it to be one of the biggest travel days in U.S. history, like topping a Thanksgiving from last year or the year before. It was enormous. And like, I have to say, being in town, because July 4th was in the middle of a week, it seems like a lot of people either took the weekend before up to July 4th, the weekend, you know, July 4th and after, or just the whole darn week off. And so Boston was, it was quiet. It was empty. My girlfriend and I kept going out to places and be like, this is really nice. It's really quiet. There's not a lot of people in any of the places that we usually go, which are often very busy. And we were really enjoying that. And this morning, I drove her to work and it was like, this is terrible. Why are all these people back?
Yeah.
But yeah, nothing was happening in the meantime. It was pretty quiet.
Yeah, that's I went after we got home last night. I went and picked up our dog at the dog sitter, and then I went to the store to buy a couple of essential things, you know, for this morning, like for breakfast and stuff like that. And the only thing quieter than my little suburban town at 9:30 at night is my little suburban town at 9:30 at night in the middle of the summer. Everybody's gone.
Yep.
It felt like everybody was gone. But I'll tell you where everybody is. They're in London. That's where they are. There's lots of people.
Apparently, lots
of people there, and it's hot. Well, I guess it's cooler today, but it was hot. It was in fact hotter where I was on my European vacation than at home, all but one day of our trip.
Was it hotter there than it was here?
I don't know about that, but it was for in Fahrenheit terms. It was in the upper 80s, mostly, and that is
that's pretty hot for
not
the UK.
A thing that they are equipped to deal with.
I have had some hot weather in the UK when I traveled there a couple times, and it is unpleasant because they are not ready for it.
No, our hotel room in London, the lady when we checked in, she said it was air conditioned, which I thought was unusual, and I'd believe it when I saw it. And what I saw when I got there was there were windows that were open, there was a plug-in fan on the floor, and there was a ceiling fan. I thought, I guess that's what they consider air conditioned.
The condition.
Just a fan. Yeah, but that conditions. It's the same thing. You know, we always talk about this. Like, if you live in a very hot place, you are built, you know, you have infrastructure built to deal with it. If you live in a very cold place, you have infrastructure built to deal with it. So, like, a cold day here in San Francisco is not cold, but it will make the people in San Francisco miserable because we don't have jackets, right? On a hot day in San Francisco, it'll make us miserable because we don't have air conditioning. Whereas if you live in Phoenix and you don't have air conditioning, oh, I'm sorry, you died, right? You have to have air conditioning.
Well, the complicating factor here is, say, for example, where I live, where at times of the year is both very hot and very cold.
Yes.
But the additional complicating factor is also the relative age of the structures, which is to say, most homes didn't have air conditioning because they were built well before that was a thing.
Right.
So, you know, we have a window unit in our bedroom, but like it has been in the 90s here for most of the days of the past, most of the past 10 days or so.
Is your only air conditioner in the bedroom?
Yeah, so I'm sitting in my office right now, and I've got the windows closed, which honestly is always kind of a crapshoot of, like, do I open the window and have air circulation, but it's hot air, or do I keep the windows closed and have no air circulation, but maybe it's a little bit cooler?
Yeah, it's 76 in my office right now, which is a little bit warm, but it's like 85 outside, so I'm not going to open the windows. But that's always the... That's always the question. I mean, have you ever?
84
I mean,
four in here.
If you get miserable, can you just like take a laptop and go into the bedroom?
Yes. No. I did that a couple days where I spent a lot of time out of the house first of all, and then when I was in the house, I would go sit in the bedroom with the like, air conditioning on. Even frankly, even just sitting in the living room with a fan on and pointed at you is even a little bit better. Like it's just that when I'm recording podcasts, which I've done many times over the past week, including today where I scheduled three podcasts,
it's not ideal to have a fan.
Why am I doing this?
I did. There was one podcast. I think it is a yet to be released Incomparable. I think it's going to be this weekend's Incomparable. I have to check where I actually just had a fan blowing. And I said, I'm just going to remove that noise later because I can't do this without the fan on.
I have one fan that I have put in my window of my office, which is actually very, very quiet. And so quiet that I actually don't think the mic picks it up. Based on like just the relative gain settings, because it's probably the quietest fan I own. It's also not the most efficient fan I own, but it is whisper silent.
Yeah, there's something to that. I thought about getting a relatively quiet fan and placing it right behind my microphone where it's just not gonna gonna pick it up, and I might do that. That's
not enough.
Possible.
Not enough people have invented the fan that you clip on to your mic boom arm. Need more of those.
Interesting idea. Well, the problem is the vibration would be bad there. Vibration. You need to clip it somewhere
on
else.
The shock mount?
Isolate it somehow. I don't know. Anything else? I mean, I don't know what else is going on in terms of tech stuff. There's betas. I installed the betas. That's the thing I did this morning when I got home. I put iOS 12 on my iPad and my iPhone. So I'm.
Oh, you put it on your phone too? Bold.
I did.
I'm going to get there, but not quite yet. I'm on the public beta train, so I've been using it on the iPad for the last couple weeks. And I will probably get around to putting it on the phone, but I've got some travel and stuff coming up, so I'll hold off for a little while.
Yeah.
But it means I don't get fancy Memojis, so that's a bummer.
Yeah, I have those. It's fun.
And I've got Mojave on my MacBook Air, which has been an interesting experience. I will say this. I love the idea of dark mode, and I have it on right now on the MacBook Air, but it is clearly designed for a Retina display, as most of the macOS interface is these days. Doesn't look quite as good on the MacBook Air screen as it does, I imagine, on like an iMac display.
Yeah.
But I haven't gotten around to putting out my main iMac machine yet, and I will also hold off on that.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. Well,
betas.
Yeah, I'm happy to. I wanted to mess around with shortcuts.
Yeah,
which is fun.
Yeah. Sadly, I don't think the public beta has access to that yet, but I'm hoping at some point before.
No, you got to right now. You got to be a developer, and you got to sign up for. You got to ask them to add you as a test flight, whatever.
I'm feeling lazy about it.
It's largely workflow with some more stuff put into it, but it's exciting. So I got to try it out more. Yeah, it is a fun thing to realize that you can create one of these workflows in shortcuts and just attach it to a Siri command. And so instead of like, okay, well then I need to trigger it from the share sheet, or I need to open it up and run it. And it's like, oh no, I just need to say, hey lady, do this thing. Like I did one that was, saving out an image from one of my numbers charts images. And I realized that literally all I have to do is select the chart and say, hey, lady, make a chart or save a chart. And it goes, boop, boop. Okay. That's it.
It's pretty great.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. So, but more to come. But I'm back, but you're going away.
That's right. We're trading off. I passed the torch on to you.
How long are you gone?
Just through the weekend.
Oh, okay. That's not so bad. Well, then,
we've got a bunch of small trips. Like we got this and a trip coming up in August that are both like half week trips.
Okay, we'll work it out. What I'm saying is, we'll be back next week probably. Then,
yes, we
will. The secret podcast. After I know we missed you. You missed us, hopefully, but we missed you, listeners, dear listeners, and each other because we didn't talk, but now we did.
That's true.
All right. Well, I'm back. Have a good weekend. I'll check in with you next week. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.